The Orange County Women's Health Project Inaugural Policy Summit report indicates women in our county have a higher rate of experiencing physical or sexual violence by an intimate partner than the state. The county figure is 26%, and the state figure is 20%. October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Good evening. You're listening to Collage, a weekly public affairs show on FM 88.5 KSBR. I'm Dawn Camber, and our guests are from the Ladera Ranch nonprofit organization called Laura's House. The organization helps domestic violence victims. We have clinical supervisor Adrian Nada and legal advocate Adam Dodge. And joining us is my assistant co-host, KSBR Air Talent Mark Remillard. Well, Adrian, please share with us what domestic violence is.
Sure. Domestic violence, also known as intimate partner violence, is a pattern of behaviors where one person uses power and control, tries to exert power and control over their partner. It exists in many forms: physical abuse, verbal abuse, sexual abuse. Also, we call it economic abuse or financial abuse. It exists across all cultures. It's a pattern of emotions and kind of a social and relational pattern where it doesn't discriminate depending on socioeconomic class, race, ethnicity, but a very prevalent pattern that we see.
Share with us what goes on at Laura's House.
Well, Laura's House is an agency that really works with the victims of domestic violence on many levels. We provide emergency shelter and transitional living, which is probably our most popular program that's known in the community. We also have a counseling and resource center where we're able to provide legal advocacy as well as therapeutic services there. We have a 24-hour crisis hotline. We provide case management services. We also have a resale store where we're able to help support our programs and interact with the community, receive donations.
What are the demographics of the people you help?
We help anyone who is suffering from the effects of domestic violence. So we obviously service the people in Orange County, but our reach extends beyond that. Through sometimes getting clients outside of the state.
Are we talking families? Can you give us some examples of the kind of people you help?
Sure. Definitely families. Sometimes, especially coming through our shelter, we see women and children there, often coming in with not just one, but four or five children coming in that need help. We also serve single women. At our Counseling and Resource Center, we also work with male victims of domestic violence there on an outpatient basis.
Do you get many male victims?
Not compared to the female victims that we get. I think there's a somewhat of a stigma associated with male victims of domestic violence, which kind of inhibits their ability to reach out for help.
So give us an example of a call you'll take of domestic violence.
Well, it really exists in so many different forms, and I think that's something that's important to communicate to the public, is that often we see some of the movie portrayals of domestic violence, the more extreme cases, and we definitely get those. We also get calls where people will say, I'm not really sure if this is domestic violence, but I'm finding that my partner is very controlling. Watching where I go, tracking my phone calls, calling me names. I don't know if this is domestic violence, but is there any way you can help me? And so we really try to work with them and get them services.
What would you say to that person?
Basically, we'd say, well, domestic violence takes many forms. And while that power and control is kind of at the basis of domestic violence, so we have them come in. It depends on whether they're calling for shelter or our counseling legal services at our CRC. We call it short for Counseling and Resource Center. But we have them come in, fill out some paperwork, talk to us. We'll go from there.
Okay, this might be the time I want to do this. There are many 911 calls of domestic violence, and I understand they do come from children. Here's an edited version of a 1991 call that the National Center on Domestic and Sexual Violence released. In the recording, a 911 operator is questioning a six-year-old girl who has complained that her stepdad is harming her mother.
Does he have any weapons?
No. But he's hurting mommy.
How's he hurting her?
He made his mommy.
Okay, don't cry. We're going to send the police.
Okay.
Okay, now where's your mother at right now?
She's in the room fighting with us.
Do you have a little baby sister?
No, I got baby brother.
Is he trying to take your baby brother?
Baby.
And he's trying to take your baby?
Yeah, because mama's not drunk. He thinks he's drunk because he can't say nothing because he's drunk. My stepdaddy's drunk.
Now, Adrian, when we get these kind of calls, you get calls from children?
Yeah, primarily at our... During our 24-hour hotline, we can get calls from children there.
And then will someone who's responding then contact Laura's house to help the mom?
I think the community is really aware of Laura's house, and we often get referrals from social workers, from court system, police officers that are fielding these incidents out in the community.
How much of abuse is caused in a cycle with parental abuse that... children who are abused, do they often end up becoming abusers as they grow up? Is that a cycle?
Yeah, we definitely see the cycle of violence passing from one generation to the next. They through modeling those behaviors, I think we work with a lot of these victims, and some of them will say, "Well, my children were really young. You know, they didn't know what was happening, or the violence was just between." My husband, let's say, and I, and not with the children. Well, the children are part of this whole dynamic. They see it, they live it, they experience the effects of that. And we definitely see a trend where those children that grew up in violent homes have higher rates, not only of being in relationships, domestic violence relationships themselves, but struggling with life in general.
Now, what can be done to help these people legally? Can you share with us what you do to help them, Adam? He's the legal advocate for Laura's House.
Sure. Like Adrian mentioned, if I will meet with clients at our shelter, or I'll meet with them at the Counseling Resource Center. They've usually arrived at us via referral or through our hotline or something of that nature. And a lot of what I do is give clients information about their legal options. So often clients that come in have been misinformed by the abusive party about their options, whether it's I'll never give you a divorce, or if you try to file a restraining order, I'll take the children away, or if you get a restraining order against me, I'll lose my job and we'll have no money. So, which is all part of the power and control that Adrian was talking about. It's a way to manipulate. So right out of the gate, before we even get into the restraining order process, just understanding that they do have options and that they do have rights as far as the legal system is concerned is really empowering for them. And then oftentimes I'll explain the restraining order process as it works in Orange County and assist them with that process if they're interested in pursuing a restraining order.
Please share with us the rights they do have, because it is common that a person can be in this cycle of domestic violence and not realize they can get out of it.
Right. Some of the rights that people have that they didn't realize they had when they come in is typically through the restraining order process. Restraining orders in California are incredibly broad. They can provide a lot of protection that people didn't realize were available to them, such as, in addition to protections within a restraining order like staying 100 yards away or no contact orders, you can also get custody orders, support orders, move out orders. In California, pets can be included not only as possessions but also have their own protective orders within a protective order. And there's even a catch-all other that you can write in other protections you need. So it's a really eye-opening experience for these victims that come in and they realize that, wow, there's a lot of options available to me through the legal system that were previously unknown.
Well, you just heard, you know, an old call of a six-year-old girl complaining about her mom being beaten by her stepdad. What would happen if it were to happen here in Orange County? How would Laura's House help her?
Well, the nice thing about Laura's House is, in addition to the legal staff, of which I am a part of, we also have therapists and we also have a shelter. So it's sort of a multi-level approach because it is such a pervasive problem. But if somebody comes into our agency reporting that their children have either witnessed or been the victims, direct victims of domestic violence, one thing we'll do is we will contact social services. We're mandated reporters at Laura's House, so we have to get Child Protective Services, at least let them know what's going on if we believe there's child abuse. And one thing that individuals don't always know about, at least the legal system, is that, and Adrian alluded to this earlier, is when a child, oftentimes clients will come in and say, oh, my husband, he's a great dad. He never hurts the kids. Well, from the court's perspective, if a child witnesses domestic violence perpetrated against another parent, that's a form of child abuse. And that's a reason to grant custody, sole legal, sole physical custody to the parent who has been abused if the children have witnessed it. And that's also a real eye-opener for them.
I've heard about a cycle of abuse in abusive households where tension will build up over time and then it kind of hits a breaking point, which results in the abuse. And then after there's like a cooling off phase, and oftentimes people think the abuse is over or that it's been fixed. How difficult is it for victims who might come into Laura's House to realize that that it is a cycle, and how difficult is it to break that cycle?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. The cycle of violence is one of the main teaching points that we often introduce to clients as they come to Laura's House. And one of the ways we do that, we have a really great group with the domestic violence agencies in Orange County called the Personal Empowerment Program. And often these individuals will come in, and we really like to introduce to them the cycle of violence. You mentioned the tension building, the violent episode, and then this kind of honeymoon period or remorseful stage. Almost, you know, every single client that we see there relates to that cycle, and it's really helpful for them to put a name to it, to identify it, and I think it helps them, it gives them an explanation as to why it's also difficult to leave, because things are changing, and that cycle, especially when you get to that honeymoon phase or that remorseful phase, it becomes, okay, things are going to change, things can be different, but then it goes back to that tension builds up, and inevitably there's another incident.
So what do you recommend when people first experience domestic violence? Do you recommend that they get out and that's it, get a divorce if they're married, leave the guy, or do you recommend that they go back eventually?
Well, I think ultimately, and from the perspective of Laura's House, we just recommend that they get help, that they get information. We're really not, and depending on how dangerous their situation is, we may give them more, information on how to take care of themselves and their children. But often we want them to not feel pressure, that we're directing them in any way or telling them what to do, but to really allow a space to be heard, to, like Adam was talking about, to be aware of what their rights are, to also be aware of what this is that they're experiencing. Because while there are a lot of themes and similarities, there are also differences in domestic violence cases and relationships. And so we want to account for those and be able to really empower the individual, the victim, to make their own choice.
In case you just joined us, you are listening to Collage, a weekly public affairs show on FM 88.5 KSBR. I'm Dawn Camber, and our guests are from Ladera Ranch nonprofit organization called Laura's House. The organization helps domestic violence victims. October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We have clinical supervisor Adrian Nada and legal advocate Adam Dodge. And joining us is my assistant co-host, KSBR Air Talent, Mark Remlard. Well, Adam, when people are involved in this domestic violence, are there rights also for the person who is caused the domestic violence?
Absolutely. And with the legal process, there is, what I mentioned earlier about restraining, the relief that you can obtain in a restraining order being very broad, that actually has had an unintended consequence of creating this sword shield scenario. Restraining orders are supposed to be shields, but because you can go in and file and not only get protection, but get support and get control of the house and control of the car and the pets and the kids, sometimes individuals seek restraining orders for the wrong reasons. Courts recognize this and are very careful when ordering a party under a restraining order to do and not do certain things, because there are instances when people take advantage of the process.
How so?
Well, restraining orders are you can get relief very quickly. You can get a restraining order the same day, sometimes in the same afternoon or same morning. And depending on the circumstance, you don't have to notify the other party that you're obtaining the restraining order. So if somebody is motivated for the wrong reasons to obtain a restraining order, i.e. they don't want to file for divorce and wait the requisite time to have a hearing on child support, and they just want to go in and get it immediately, they can achieve this through the restraining order process. But if judges are keenly aware of this, and if they determine that somebody is obtaining a restraining order for the wrong reasons, they will come down incredibly hard on them, and it will have ramifications through their future divorce and what have you.
Is it possible that if a person didn't know that there was a restraining order against that individual would be arrested if that individual came near the person who filed the restraining order?
That's a really good question. And it's something that I often have to educate our clients on. When a restraining order is made, it issued and signed by a judge, it is effective when made, meaning it is a valid order. However, the restrained party, if they haven't been served with the restraining order, and they violate the restraining order before they've been served with it, they can't violate the order if they don't know about it, but the order is still in effect. So a scenario I often tell my clients is, if the restrained person comes and starts pounding on your door and they haven't been served with the restraining order, call the police. The police will show up. If the individual's still there, they'll serve him with the restraining order and ask him to leave, but they won't arrest him because he can't violate an order he doesn't know about.
Does that happen often?
Typically, the other party finds out very quickly that there's a restraining order against them through the grapevine before they're actually served. So it happens, but it's not common.
But there's also incidents I hear in the media that there are restraining orders, but they don't hold much water because the person who has the restraining order filed against still comes to the person and can commit domestic violence against that person.
That's true. It is, people will often say, hey, a restraining order is just a piece of paper. My response to that is, yes, it's just a piece of paper, but it's a very powerful piece of paper because if somebody violates it, they can go to jail. Now, and this is something Adrian mentioned about giving clients that come in information about protecting themselves. We call it safety planning. And I always tell clients, look, restraining orders are great, but don't get lulled into a false sense of security because you have one. You should always know where your keys are, your money is, how you're going to get out of the house if something goes bad, where you're going to go, have 911 on speed dial, because ultimately you need to protect yourself first and can't just rely on the restraining order to protect you.
Do you often see that once one party has filed a restraining order, that actually almost enrages the other party and makes things worse?
Actually, no. And that's always the concern, or very often the concern of our clients is, oh, if I get a restraining order, he or she is going to be so mad and it's going to make things so much worse. And in my experience, it has the opposite effect usually, which is sort of it calms things down, because before you get the courts involved, it's usually something that has been kept behind closed doors and the abusive party has never been told by anyone, police or otherwise, that they can't do certain things. But when a judge says you can't do certain things, it tends to have a very deep impact on the violence that was taking place beforehand.
Now, do you help victims file for divorce so that they can get completely out of the situation?
We do not. I assist clients only in obtaining restraining orders. However, we do recognize that divorce and custody are often go hand in hand with the filing of restraining orders. So on the fourth Tuesday of every month, we've partnered with the Orange County Bar Association to host a legal clinic at our office in Ladera Ranch, where clients of Laura's House Only can meet one-on-one with a volunteer family law attorney to talk about whatever issues they want to address with that attorney. And that's a really valuable opportunity for our clients.
There's probably a lot of people who experience domestic violence, don't have the courage to get out because they rely on their partner, married partner or not married partner, for financial support. Does Laura's House help these people so that they can have the courage to get out and not be harmed?
Well, financial considerations are always a concern. And yes, we typically will point clients. It depends on if the client is in our shelter or if they come to our counseling and resource center. But there are a lot of resources in the county that we can put them in touch with. For example, if someone is a victim of a crime and the perpetrator has been arrested, there's something called the Victims of Crime application that can assist that victim monetarily with relocation expenses or things of that nature. We can point them in the direction of public assistance and things like that. So there are options out there, and we try to put them in touch with the right people.
But indeed, if someone hits another person in the case of domestic violence, shouldn't the person who hit the other person be arrested?
Well, in a vacuum, yes. But in reality, very often the police aren't called for the very same reason why people sometimes are scared to file a restraining order. They don't want to make the situation worse. They don't want to make the other party more angry by getting the police involved. But if the police do get called, then we are hopeful that they will be taken into custody if they've hit or physically abused or sexually abused their partner, spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend.
Because in some cases it's a crime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In most cases, it's a crime. But what we found, or at least I should say in my experience, when a party gets arrested, the arresting agency, whether it's the sheriff or local police, will perform their own investigation and determine whether or not to submit it to the district attorney to press charges. The nice thing about our agency is we work independently of any criminal investigation. So a client, even if somebody is arrested, taken into custody, and then released, and the district attorney is elected not to press charges, we can still assist them to get a restraining order because a restraining order is not criminal. At least the ones we assist clients with are not criminal. They are civil. Restraining orders are issued under the California Family Code. And we take them to the civil courts to assist them with that process.
Adrian, what kinds of advice do you give to victims of domestic violence who are thinking maybe they might want to go back to the person because they believe that person will change?
Well, ultimately, I think that comes up often. It's a very common, I think probably one of, in my experience at Laura's House, one of the most common questions is, will he or she ever change? And often there's a strong hope that this person will change. And so we really like to talk about what that might look like, what the potential risks involved in that, the vulnerability that's there, working on what they've learned so far. A lot of what we do in our therapy program is work on self-esteem and empowerment. And so part of this process, sometimes, even if they're growing and they're learning, there can be a moment of doubt and anxiety of, what am I losing here? Some hopes of, I want to keep the family together. I've been married to this person for a very long time, and we've put in this a lot of effort into this relationship. So we really work on talking to them about it. Advice can be more along the lines of the safety concerns, but we also know that we can only do so much to stop someone, and sometimes they have to work through that in order to finally be done with it eventually.
I want you to go over what types of things people should not tolerate, which is domestic violence.
Well, it includes really so many things. I think some of the more common things we'll see is any type of physical violence, which could be hitting, kicking, shoving, pushing. But we also see this come up where the abusive partner is throwing things. There's a lot of threat and intimidation, which may not actually be touching the person. They may be cleaning or showing their weapons to their partner, which they're not actually harming them with those weapons, but the threat is there. That's all abuse. Verbal threats, as well as just we look for the emotional patterns as well of that control and manipulation, the belittling, that is definitely a part of domestic violence as well.
Adam, is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah. One of the other programs that we haven't mentioned that our agency offers is our HEART program, which is the which stands for Healthy Emotions and Attitudes in Relationships for Teens. And it's an outreach program where one of our outreach coordinators goes out and speaks to high schools, colleges, churches, any other agencies that have a large population of young people, either parents or teens themselves, to talk to them about teen dating violence. It's a pervasive problem and something that is not at the forefront as far as media outlets are concerned. It's a little bit taboo. Parents don't really want to think that their 13 or 14 year old is in an abusive relationship. It's definitely similar to the way domestic violence was many years ago, where it was, hey, keep it in the home and we don't talk about it sort of thing. And we're finding that teen dating violence is a real problem that maybe should be talked about more than it is. So the HEART program really is about awareness and to encourage parents to talk to their children about teen dating violence and hopefully get a better sense of where their children are at.
If people want more information about Laura's House, how can they reach you?
Well, one of the best ways to reach us is at our website, which is www.laurashouse.org, or you can call our Counseling and Resource Center at 949-361-3775, or you can call our hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that number is 866-498-1511.
Give me those number again, please.
Sure. The phone number to the Counseling and Resource Center is 949-361-3775. And our 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week hotline is 866-498-1511.
Do you think we're ever going to be in a period where people will realize what domestic violence is and there'll be less of it?
I think so. I think it's really about education and increasing awareness. I think that we definitely have come a long way in the years leading up to where we are now, and recognizing it in the legal system, but also recognizing it not just as a problem that occurs with the certain type of person and a certain population, but that it can happen to anyone. It's a relational dynamic, and we thrive on relationships. So I think with more education and just keeping the message going, it will change more and more.
You have been listening to Collage, a weekly public affairs show on FM 88.5 KSBR. I'm Dawn Camber, and our guests are from the Ladera Ranch nonprofit organization called Laura's House. The organization helps domestic violence victims. We had clinical supervisor Adrian Nada, legal advocate Adam Dodge, and joining us has been my assistant co-host, KSBR air talent Mark Remillard. Please join us next week for another show right here on FM 88.5 KSBR.